M&K Talk YA now presents The Queen of Nothing, Part 1 of the Folk of the Air Trilogy by Holly Black. Welcome back to M&K Talk YA.
I'm Marissa Snyder.
And I'm Katie Bradford.
And this is our young adult fiction podcast. And this week we started the third book of the Folk of the Air trilogy by Holly Black. This book is called The Queen of Nothing. And we read up to part two.
Yep. I can't believe we're almost done with this world. I'm really enjoying living here.
I know. And I'm just like, I have been waiting and waiting and waiting for this third book to come out so that we could read this for our show.
Yeah.
And it just seems like so surreal that it was here. It finally is here and we're doing it because this is a series I've wanted to read for forever.
Well, and I can't believe I haven't read anything else by Holly Black yet because like we said in the first one, she's written a lot of stuff and I am loving her writing so much. I'm like, how did I miss her for so long?
I know. I feel the same way.
But maybe we'll have to do another one after. Well, not right after, but later this season or next season or something with her stuff. I also, again, I think we've mentioned this before. We did so many duologies last year that this is a perfect pacing for a three-book series, I think. It, again, builds off each other, continues the story, but they're also, like, kind of each different. I don't feel like we're repeat. Sometimes with trilogies, especially the middle one, you know, we talk about this a lot. It, like, it's kind of dull or boring or it's just, like, filler. Or you start to see kind of the same thing over and over again. I like that we sort of mm-hmm. have these three distinct, like, time periods. So, like, the first book was sort of her figuring out this that she had some power and, like, claiming the throne, sort of, if you will. Or, like, gaining the power. The second book was all about how do you keep the power. And this third mm-hmm. book is its own thing entirely.
I know. Okay, so we left off for book two, the second book. It ended with
her being exiled.
Jude becoming queen, and then she was exiled, right? And she was off with the humans.
And nobody knew.
Exactly. And so now, in this first book, we have her coming back on the request of her sister, Taryn.
Yes, but can we talk about even before that for a moment? Because another thing that I love about this book is I love when the fantasy world is like its own unique thing, but still touches with the real world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the other book I think of that kind of does that really well is, like, Daughter of Smoke and Bone. I loved how, like, part of it was set in our world, but, like, it still felt like a very unique, separate.
Yeah, there was Prague and then the World of Angels.
Fantasy world, yeah. But you could, like, reach it. Yeah. And so I love all the glimpses we get of the human world, and especially seeing humans interacting with fairy and fairy interacting with the human world and all of that. So I just love this glimpse of anytime we see Vivi's life and, like, her relationship with Heather and all of that, but then also seeing Jude, who is a human, but is, like, very identifies with the fairy world. You know, like, that's where she grew up and that's what she considers mm-hmm. home. And so seeing her kind of struggle to be back in the human world, but actually being human. And I just, like, love that whole dynamic at the beginning. And then seeing her run into, what was that? The fight she has on the rooftop.
Oh, yeah. Grima Ma.
Yeah.
The general of the Court of Teeth. Yeah. She's like, it is weird because even though she's in the human world, there are still fairies in the human world. So she's like working with a guy named Brian or something like that. And she's like making a living by tracking down fairies who are causing problems and like getting rid of them.
Yeah. She's basically like a fairy spy in the mortal.
Assassin.
Yeah. Or a fairy assassin in the mortal world kind of thing. And
she's a bounty hunter.
And again, that's the other thing I love, how there's this, like, underground society in our world with these, you know, like, it's like, oh, everything's mm-hmm. normal, but, like, even, like, the fake money thing and how, like, if you use iron, you can, like, like, I'm just imagining working as a cashier somewhere and, like, some eccentric person walks in and it's actually a fairy with horns that are mm-hmm. glamored or something. I don't know. Just, like, I just love that whole thing. But yeah.
I agree. And I like how it kind of sets up meeting this new character, this Grima Mog, and having Jude spar with her. And she basically says that, like, hey, the Court of Teeth have backed Matic and the High King's going to be dethroned. And it's kind of, you kind of have that question of like, oh, why did she leave the Court of Teeth? Like, what is she doing in the real world? Will we see her again?
Yeah.
So it was kind of a good setup.
Where do her loyalties lie? Yeah, all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was great too, because she felt like this was her accepting being cast out of Faerie, and she doesn't know what's going on with Cardin and her dad and all this stuff. And then her job in the mortal world actually, like you said, ties back, and she's getting information about what's going on back home. And then Taryn shows up.
Ugh.
And Taryn's...
Oh my gosh, I was so mad.
Do you still hate her?
I was furious. Yes.
Yeah.
I was furious when she shows up and she was like, hey, so I know I basically ruined your life and betrayed you for this terrible, terrible guy, but I'm in trouble now, and you need to pretend to be me and come and convince everyone that I didn't kill my husband.
And again, with the risk. It would be one thing if it was like, will you just, like, come pretend to be me so sure. I can be in two places at once for this meeting that I have to go to at school, or something stupid. But it's like, will you risk your life and, like, yeah.
And also, like, you knew what a crappy guy Locke was. You married him anyway. You snapped. Killed him. And now you want your sister to get you out of it. Like, F off, Taryn.
Not only did she kill him, she had some other news as well about her changing circumstances.
Yeah, she's pregnant. Good for you. Yay. I'm sorry. I just have no love for Taryn whatsoever.
Well, okay, and I agree. She still hasn't won me back over, and I was really hoping for a moment like this, and I feel like she still didn't grasp the opportunity fully enough, because I didn't feel like she was apologetic or sorry enough or, like, making up for it enough. I feel like she needed something and...
Agreed.
...is still, like, playing her cards right. And even with this recognition that, like, because I think before we had this idea that Taryn was sort of mad at Jude because Taryn's way of dealing with their situation was to, like, assimilate and realize they didn't have power, she didn't have power, and just, like, kind of cater to the status quo a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I thought she was mad at Jude for fighting it. And then I sort of was thinking, now that she is also, like, killed someone and realized some of the risk. I don't know. I was hoping for her to be more like, oh my goodness, I'm such an idiot. I understand you better now. I can't possibly ask this of you, but I'm going to because I have no other option. And, like, I know you could turn me out on my, I don't know, just instead of this, like, sort of expectation.
Some kind of remorse.
Yeah.
And she didn't even say, like, oh, this was my fault. I made the wrong choice. She asks Jude why she let her marry Locke in the first place. Like, it's Jude's fault.
Yes.
It makes no sense. Like, take some ownership for your actions, lady.
I know. And again, sometimes I forget that they're twins, and I think of her as, like, the younger sister. And then when I remember they're twins, I get mad all over again because I'm like, dude.
You should be closer. Yeah.
And you're, like, old enough to know, like, you're mature. Like, I don't know. It would be one thing if you were, like, 5 years younger and you didn't remember your parents and she, or I don't know, certain things, like, maybe I could buy. But then I'm like, you guys have been in the same boat the whole time. How did you close your eyes to all these things?
And also, I just feel like Taryn has been so passive this entire time. Like, I will say I was surprised to hear that she killed Locke. Like, I didn't think she had that in her.
Well, and I still feel like there's more to the story that we don't fully know. Or I think Taryn is still hiding something.
Yeah, that's entirely possible, because we said we suspected that from the start.
Yeah.
And we still have a book, so... But, so basically Jude goes along with it because she's a great person and loves her sister despite everything.
Which I do understand that part, even though I wanted to be like, she doesn't deserve it. And also Jude sort of loves the idea of going back to Faerie, and so I think any excuse to go back is appealing.
And I love that she does leave, like, marmalade in Taryn's closet just, like, out of spite, so it'll smell bad when she gets back. Like, I love that she's, like, ready to help her, but she's not quite ready to forgive her. Like, there's a little bit of vengeance that she wants before she fully makes amends.
And again, I 100% agree with that. And also, that seems very siblingish to me, too. It's, you know, like, yeah, if they're in trouble, you'll do whatever, but also, they drive you crazy.
And then we also learn, whenever Jude goes back to Faerie, that Cardin has been sending her letters. So,
well, he mentions something about letters, but we know nothing about what they are, what they say, who has them, who kept them from her. Yeah. If he really sent them. I guess he did really send them because he can't lie, but.
Yeah. But I think that was kind of interesting because we had the question of, like, when Cardin banished her, was he saying that, like, I'm angry and you can only come back when the crown pardons you? Or was he doing, like, a play on words saying, like, you can actually come back whenever you want? And we learned that we were right. He was kind of doing a play on words. So when they finally meet, he's like, yeah, I said you can come back when the crown pardons you and you are a queen now. So you could have come back whenever. And I love that we were right about that.
And it does seem like they're, like, he was kind of expecting her to, or, like, that he thinks they're in on something together because of these letters. Like, he assumes that she has this information and she's still so right. angry with him. And then vice versa, and we'll talk about the details that get us here more. He doesn't know that she doesn't know that he's been sending her this information. And so when she's, like, pretending to be Taryn and these, like, assassination attempts are happening, even though she's actually trying mm-hmm. to protect him, he's like, what are you up to? And so there's this, like, very – I kind of love when things happen like this in stories where you get it because it's not even like someone's keeping a secret. They just, like, legitimately haven't had a chance to talk. And there's all this misinterpretation of – like, heartfelt gestures or whatever. And I don't know. So I'm really excited to see how this plays out.
And do we know who was keeping his letters from her?
No, I don't think we even, I don't think we know enough about that. Okay. And that is a great question because is that someone who's betraying them or is it like the mail system sucks?
It could be either. I mean, right? I'm yeah. sure it's probably hard to get letters between Fairyland and wherever she lives.
Or even if it's not a betrayal thing. Like, I could see Vivi just, like, getting the letters and being, like...
forgetting, yeah.
She's upset. Or, you know, I mean, like, not even, like, oh, I'm going to keep this from her. But, like, she doesn't need this loser in her life. Like, being, like, kind right. of the protective big sister thing or whatever.
Okay, so we also meet some other characters from the Court of Teeth.
Well, okay, so first, okay. So we find out about the letters. Cardin knows that Jude is not Taryn, but Maddox goes to save Taryn because she's the good daughter, tries to kill Cardin in the process, and doesn't realize that Jude is Taryn. So he, like, rescues slash kidnaps her, depending on your perspective, and Jude has to keep pretending that she's not, ugh. Or that she is her sister.
And honestly, I was very surprised that Maddox didn't find out sooner that she was impersonating Taryn. Like, Orianna figured it out before he did, which is kind of shocking.
Yeah, but I also think it goes to that whole you believe what you want to believe.
True.
Thing. You know, like, it would be one thing if he thought, I think he thought Jude was, like, off in the mortal world doing her own thing. And why would any, like, I think it didn't even, like, cross his mind that she would be, because she wasn't infiltrating the camp.
True.
On yeah. purpose or anything, you know. And so, and they still know each other super well, but I agree, sort of as a father figure, and, like, he did know them both, and I'd be kind of disappointed if my father figure didn't recognize me versus my
agreed. Friend. But I also would be kind of disappointed if my father figure found out that I killed my husband and was very pleased about it.
Pretty much Maddox as a father figure is pretty disappointing.
Yeah, all around.
But I still love their relationship because they still have this weird... Like, there's a lot of hatred and they're not on the same side, but there also is this, like, bit of understanding and respect between them, even when he ultimately does realize it's Jude and they're fighting. I still feel like there is this degree of, like, almost him thinking, I should have trusted you more up front because you would have been a better ally than an enemy kind of thing.
Agreed, yeah.
Like, I don't think he's ever actually said that or whatever, but I think he, like, recognizes that maybe he didn't give her enough credit up front mm-hmm. and she could have been an asset. That he didn't recognize it earlier.
Yeah, because he says that he's going to, what, challenge Cardin to a duel?
Yeah.
And Cardin's like, we know he's not really a good sword fighter. So.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
So she's like, she's basically like, that will never work, because why would he agree to that?
Exactly, yeah.
And, yeah, Maddox seems certain because of her, right? Isn't it something to do with Jude? Isn't he basically like matters of the heart or whatever?
Yes. Yes, he basically is aware that Cardin has feelings for Jude and thinks that, like, she will be his weak spot. But
and she's not even sure if that's true. And I'm not even 100% sure if it's true, but I kind of think it is.
Right? I think it is, yeah.
Yeah.
So we also have these other new characters from the Court of yep. Teeth. And this is where Baum is from and yep. Roach, I think. Yeah, they escaped from the Court of Teeth.
I can't remember if they were from there or if they... ended up there at some point, but yes, they had a terrible experience in the past.
Well, the people from the Court of Teeth are terrifying. That yeah. Lady Nor and Lord Gerald and this creepy child queen who's like wearing a bridle that's like sewn onto her face or whatever.
Yeah, because they're trying to control her.
I think so. That's what it seems like. But she really seems like a slave, even though she's technically a queen.
Yeah.
So there's like something very sinister going on there, and I don't really understand it. But
well, and the whole thing was interesting because they were talking about basically how previously, like, people swore loyalty to the High King, and as we know, you can't, like, go back on your word or whatever in Faerie. So, like, the courts were sending their children elsewhere, or, like, to the mortal world. That was when they were doing, like, the changeling thing in part two, so that they could, like, avoid swearing loyalty and then, like, come back later. And I think somehow she was related to that kind of idea. I don't know if she was necessarily sent to the mortal world, but I think somehow they had like kept her separate. But I think possibly they don't know her that well, or they haven't given her a lot of, you know, like she, it sounds sort of like if you're keeping your kid secret from the High Court, how much of a life do they have? I think she probably has been enslaved or whatever.
Yeah, I'm just very curious about this Queen Sirin, and I really want to know more about her.
I do too, especially because if she has been enslaved, who is she loyal to? Or is she someone that we can
count on?
Like, free and, yeah, be an ally, or I don't know.
Oh, we also learn so many crazy revelations in this story. So, Jude finds Ghost.
Oh, yeah.
Hanging out, well, not hanging out, being imprisoned in a cave.
hanging out.
Just hanging out in this cave.
Screaming.
With my cave bat friends. And we learned some interesting things about Ghost.
Yeah, because we knew he betrayed her, but we didn't know why before.
Right. And we learned that it's because he gave Locke his true name.
Yeah, good old Locke. Ugh. Still causing trouble from the other side.
And only because so Ghost is the one who killed Locke's mother on the command of Dane. And Ghost was so guilt-ridden that he gave Locke his true name kind of like as a, I don't know, I owe you one. Yeah.
Sorry I took your mom.
Here's my name.
Here, have complete control of me. Yeah.
Yeah. And so,
and probably not realizing who Locke or what kind of person Locke was.
So we learned that Locke actually was the one who asked Ghost to get Jude captured by the Undersea.
Yep.
And then Locke gave Ghost's true name to Matic as a dowry for Taryn and a seat at the table when he came to power. So now everyone has Ghost's true name, poor guy. What was it again? Was it like, it's something weird. Something like Gavin.
It was something weird.
Or Garrett. Was it Garrett?
That sounds right, actually. I don't remember.
So this is a bit of a problem because a lot of people can control Ghost and
we don't know where he is right now. So Matic implied that he sent him ahead to assassinate Cardin at the Great Hall. But now that appears to have been a setup because Jude goes to find him and goes up to the rafters to assassinate the assassin who never appears. And her own warning that there's an assassin there gets her caught. And that's where we leave off.
Right, because she goes to free Ghost, but Maddox's there waiting for her. And that's where he was like, oh, I know you're not Taryn. I know you're Jude. And that's also where she has that amazing showdown with Matic, and he stabs her, but he, like, hesitates.
And almost kills her.
Yeah, but he, like, hesitates before he, like, gives the killing blow. And that's when Vivi and Taryn come, and Grimama came to save her.
Oh, yeah.
And this kind of pisses me off. So this scene where, like, Vivi and Taryn come to Jude's rescue and they save her life after Matic has stabbed her, they seem to use this moment as Jude forgiving Taryn and being like, oh, she came for me. She saved me. And I was like, no, that's not enough. That's hardly anything. Like, oh, really? You're going to forgive her just because she showed up and, like, finally saved your life once?
And it wasn't just, like, Taryn by herself risking everything or, like, turning on the I mean, yes, she did pick Jude over Matic in this one instance, but
was not enough, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. But I think it was a good step.
Yes, it's a step in the right direction.
But I still think we still need that, like, not groveling necessarily, but basically, like, being like,
I'm sorry.
I messed up. I am an idiot. I am so sorry. I don't know why I didn't choose you in the first place. Is there any way you can forgive me? And then Jude can be like, of course I forgive you. You're my sister.
Yes.
But we still need Taryn to ask for it. I don't know.
That's We absolutely need that still. I will not be satisfied until she says, I'm sorry. Put it that way.
Sincerely. Not like, I'm sorry, but I am pregnant, so I need you to go do this for me.
So feel bad for me. Boo-hoo.
Yeah.
I also really loved how, so like you said, Maddox sent Ghost to try and assassinate Cardin.
One of my we don't know if he, did he act, well, I guess because he can't lie. What did he say exactly? Did he actually send Ghost, or did he just set her up? I couldn't tell.
Oh, that's true. I think he might have set her, well, I don't know. I know she thinks that he sent Ghost to kill Cardin. And my favorite part of this half of this book, I think, was when V says, she was like, it's so dumb how people think that killing a king will make them a better king.
Oh, yeah.
And she was like, imagine if a lawyer passed the bar by killing another lawyer. I love that. That was
great analogy. So her, too. I love how even when she's like literally stumbles upon her sister and her dad, like, about to kill each other, and she's just, like, able to be like, this is so dumb. You guys, politics is stupid.
But then I was a little bit confused at the end because, yes, we learned that Maddox set her up, and so she basically, like, sends a note to Cardin being like, hey, someone's gonna try and assassinate you.
While she goes up in the rafters with bows and arrows to try to assassinate Ghost. So,
and of course,
it was a great setup.
Bomb sees her, and of course she's going to think that she's the assassin. Like, ah, what a dumb trap to walk into.
Well, and again, this is another one of those misunderstandings, because mm-hmm. Cardin then sees her, and he's like, what the hell, are you trying to kill me? I thought we were on the same side, basically.
Yeah, and he calls her a dirty mortal liar.
And she's like, I can't. Even, she doesn't even have time to say this, but in her mind, she's like, actually, I was here trying to protect you, but, like, you know.
I didn't get this part because, so, they try and put her in chains, and Cardin is, you know, mad and calling her names, but then it ends with him acknowledging that she's his wife and the queen. And so I'm like, what? I don't understand Cardin. I never know if he's, like, angry at Jude and dislikes her, or if he actually loves her.
I know. So I'm curious to see what happened, because that's, like, literally where we left off. Mm-hmm. He finally acknowledges her, but we don't really have a lot of information. They haven't had a chance to really talk, so I'm very curious to see what their conversation is like. I do think he does care about her and obviously, like, doesn't want her dead or whatever, but I don't know that that means I think he still possibly believes that she tried to assassinate him.
Yes, I agree. But
I don't think he, like, 100% trusts her.
But how can you come back? I don't know. How can you come back and love someone if you think they just tried to kill you? I don't know.
I don't know.
It's just weird.
Wait, what did she say? Well, I need to check this out again. Did she say anything like, I didn't try and kill you?
All I remember is him calling her a dirty mortal liar, which doesn't bode well.
Yeah, she said, I lost your cloak, and he said, you're a liar, a dirty mortal liar. And then the other guy is like, oh, she broke her exile, she tried to murder the king, we have to put her in chains. And then he says, don't touch her, she's my wife, most definitely not an exile. Yeah.
It's just, he's hot and then he's cold.
But also, I think, well, I'm curious if she'll be, like, locked up in his room or something. Like, not locked mm-hmm. up and sent to the Tower of Forgetting, but I don't know that she's, like, going to be free and clear when she wakes up.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But I guess we'll find out.
I guess so. Oh, we also learn why, I mean, we just get little nuggets of things in this half, which I liked. So we learned why Cardin was sent to live with Baelican.
Oh, yeah.
And it was because we get that scene where Dane was, like, challenging Cardin to shoot acorns off up some mortal guy's head. But Cardin didn't know that the mortal was the lover of, what was his name? Maddox, like, right-hand guy.
Yeah.
And so, basically,
Val something.
Dane shot the mortal knowing that, oh, Val Morin?
Yeah, that's it. With Cardin's arrow.
He knew that.
He switched arrows. Yeah. He was like, hey, Cardin, let's switch arrows, so that it was Cardin's arrow that actually killed him.
And he knew that if he killed this mortal, that Val Morin's would go mad with grief and that he could get his position.
Yeah. So, again, not that we ever thought Dane was necessarily a good guy, but we always thought Baelican was way worse.
Yeah.
And that Dane was, like, a relatively good option based on, like, how things went in the first book, even though we saw some glimpses that he might not have been as great as he seemed. But now we're really seeing how mischievous is an understatement, how, like, connivingly mm-hmm. evil he was.
Yeah,
and that Baelican, like we said, he might not have been, he was still a really cruel person, but he did. He was the one who, like, took in his brother and some of this other stuff. So, yeah.
I just don't know. Okay, should we talk predictions for the next book?
Wait, we have one other thing that we, or not one other, but we have another thing that we learned a little bit more about, or a character who resurfaced, and I don't think his story is done.
Grimson.
And that's the Smith guy. What?
Grimson.
Yeah, Grimson. Because he's another person. He's like the new Locke in my mind, where he's making his own story. I don't trust him 100%. He's like has way too much power to, like, without knowing his motives. I don't know. He just makes me really nervous.
And I love that all of his works, like, all of his creations are cursed.
Yeah.
So we learned that, like, he gave Cardin an earring, but the earring could turn into a spider and would kill him. And we also learned that, like, he tried to do it already because Jude, like, sees the spider in Cardin's room.
Yeah.
So I'm super nervous about what this means because, like, didn't he give Jude the earrings that she gives to Taryn?
And then Jude's wearing them. Didn't he say something like, the longer you wear them, the, like, when you take them off, you're gonna, like, age faster or something?
Ooh.
Or am I making that up? Or maybe he just said something in general about you'll feel like you're more beautiful and then you'll feel uglier when you take them off. I can't remember.
There's probably something happening with those earrings.
But I agree. I think there's more to it. And again, all of his gifts have a flip side.
Mm-hmm. So I'm nervous about what he's up to for sure.
Yeah. Especially because we don't know who he's loyal to or what his
endgame is. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think he just wants to be sung about in ballads or something. Mm-hmm. He just wants to be, like, crazy famous. But that could mean a lot of different things. And this is where he reminds me of Locke, because I sort of feel like he's playing all these different players just to, like, create a good story. So it's a little bit different than Locke, but it just reminds me sort of his mindset, where he's like, I just want to be in this epic ballad where I'm a key player. So let me, like, give everybody a tool to make something dramatic happen.
Right. And he wants to be on the winning side. Like, he wants to find favor with whoever wins.
Yep. Because history favors the victor.
Very true.
So yeah, what are our predictions?
Okay. I have a prediction for, based on the prologue that we got from this book, there was that, what was he, like a fortune teller who foretells that Cardin's going to be the destruction of the crown and the ruination of the throne, and out of his spilled blood, a great ruler will rise. So,
oh, that was another interesting thing. Yeah. Speaking of spilled blood, when Jude is stabbed by Madoc and is, like, bleeding out, and she remembers she's the queen of fairyland and, like, calls on the earth to heal her, and it works, and, like, flowers grow where her blood fell and stuff like that. Sorry, but go on.
She definitely is tied to the earth and is, like, legitimately recognized as queen.
Even though she's mortal.
So what do you think about this prophecy, though? Like, out of Cardin's spilled blood, a great ruler will rise.
Is that her?
That's what I was thinking. Maybe it's Jude.
Mm. But I don't want him to...
I don't want him to die, though.
Spill too much. Like, I guess he could spill blood without dying.
But... Well, also, like, what if he's the great ruler, but he has to be wounded or like, bleed or something? I don't know.
What if he, like...
Like, what if he's the great ruler that will rise, but, like... Something has to happen. Because it doesn't say out of his death.
Yeah,
it just
says
out of his spilled blood. So maybe there's something with his blood that, I don't know.
I know. And you know how I get with prophecies where I'm like...
Yeah.
Get really frustrated. So, yeah. I mean, I kind of think at the end of the day we're going to have Cardin and Jude happily ruling.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But I think it is likely that a lot of blood will be spilled before then.
Do you think Madoc is going to live or die?
Oh, that's a great question. I kind of keep changing what I think.
I think he's gonna die.
I think he has to die, sort of. The other thing that I could see would be somehow, and I'm not sure if it would be Cardin or Madoc, but someone going from, like, possibly maybe Cardin, like, spilled blood, he is no longer a fairy, but somehow becomes a mortal, and then they, like, live out their mortal life together instead of fairy life. I don't know.
But I want them to have a long time together.
But Oak doesn't even want to be king.
Oh my gosh, that's true. I mean, let's do an update on little Oak. He really doesn't want to be king at all. And
he's such a, like, preteen.
Oh my gosh, so much. I love it. And it's kind of funny because there's a moment where Jude recognizes, like, this is harder than I thought to raise him because all I have to go off of is how Maddox raised me.
My terrible example.
Yeah. And she like purposely removed him from Fairyland because she didn't want Maddox to be influencing Oak. And now it's like the only example she has is her horrible father. So it's pretty tough.
Well, and speaking of bad parents, Oriana, or is that her name?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Oriana also talks about Cardin's mom a little bit more and how she was worried for Taryn to be in court by herself because Cardin's mom is, like, such bad news. So I'm also curious to see how that comes back around and the story of their parents, because Taryn's made comments about, I understand mom more now, maybe she didn't love dad, and, like, I feel like there's still some background info we're going to get to on how we ended up here.
I hope so.
With all these terrible parents everywhere.
I hope so.
Also, is Taryn just going to have a baby and stop being a loser? Or do you think she's going to keep ruining things?
I mean, now that she's pregnant, I don't really want anything bad to happen to her.
I don't really want anything bad to happen to her either. And I guess I could see being a mother changing her for the better. But I need to actually see her express that more explicitly. Or something.
Agreed. And, like, I think we learned that, like, treating people badly very, very rarely leads to anything good. So, like, I don't want to see her banished and, like, you know, her being alone and having to, like, raise this baby by herself and then, you know.
That's the other thing, because all she wanted was, like, belong and be in love and all this stuff. So I'm curious if she finds that somehow by the end of the book, where she, like, finds a new partner. But there's really no one that I can think of who right now would be good for that.
I mean, I don't think she necessarily needs to be with someone other than her sisters.
Yeah.
I think that'd probably be the best outcome for her, honestly. Like, learn to love your sisters before you try to find another guy.
Well, I'd love her to just go back to the mortal world and raise her baby in peace.
Oh, yeah. That'd be good.
Stay away from all this. But we'll see.
So, did you do any research this week?
So, yes, but not a ton. I looked at dictators who went into exile, and I know I did something similar to this at some point, but I was looking at different dictators, so I couldn't remember specifically what I looked at last time. But one of the big ones that comes up in
Napoleon?
Yeah, Napoleon, because he got exiled twice, so he's like an expert on being exiled. He, I don't know, conquered most of Europe back in the day and killed like 3.4 million people or something crazy like that. And then in 1812, he invaded Russia, and history always repeats itself when people invade Russia and they're not prepared for the weather and all kinds of stuff. It was a disaster, and he abdicated his throne in 1814 and was exiled to Elba, which is a island off the coast of Italy. But then in 1815, he snuck back into France and assembled an army and tried again, but was defeated by the British and the Prussians at Waterloo.
I've been to Waterloo.
That's where I lived.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I always forget that you lived in Belgium. Yep.
Yeah. I don't know if I've told you the story. I maybe have. But, like, literally the week we moved there, they were reenacting the Battle of Waterloo. And it's my first time out of the country.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
I'm, like, 11 years old. And I'm like, Europe is so weird and backwards. And like, why are they dressed like, I didn't realize it was a reenactment. And I was just like, this is how I imagined Europe, sort of from like history and whatnot. But like, how is it? And then a week later, it was normal. But but yeah, so then he was exiled again because the British were like, hey, we didn't want to fight a whole nother war. And he was sent to the South Atlantic, a small island called St. Helena. And then he wrote his memoirs, and they think he was poisoned by arsenic slowly. And when he died at only 51, in 1821, his priest and servant allegedly removed and preserved his penis.
What? No.
And the organ was bought by a Columbia University urologist, John K. Latimer, for $3,000 in 1977.
Oh my god.
And there's the short history of Napoleon's life in exile.
Wait, do you have a picture of it?
I do not, nor do I want to Google to find that, to be honest.
Preserved penis. I'll Google it. I'll put on private browser and I'll Google it. Do you dare me to?
Yes, I do.
Okay, I'm doing it right now.
Okay, let me know if this is, if you find what you're looking for, if you find some terrible things instead.
Why did he cut it off? Oh, is it, the doctor cut it off, but like, oh my god.
It was this priest and servant, which, like, I don't think that's part of the priestly vows that I've heard about.
It's part of an article called The Top 10 Most Famous Stolen Body Parts.
Which we've talked about that before, too, haven't we?
Have we? I was going to say, I have to find a book that somehow lines up with that research, because...
Or we've talked about, like, weird body parts that have... Famous body parts that have been... I don't know. We've talked something about this. I don't remember Napoleon's penis
being... Ew. They say it wasn't properly preserved, so it's been compared to a piece of leather, a shriveled eel, and to beef jerky. All right, I'm looking at images. Oh, boy.
I have so many questions that I wish I didn't have. Like, was this Napoleon's request that when he dies, someone preserve...
I very much doubt that.
...his penis? Or was this someone else being like, Napoleon, his penis needs to be preserved?
Well, I don't know. He was a short guy. So you know what they say about... Oh my god. Okay, I need to get out of Google. There's a Google image of someone holding what is supposedly the foot-long preserved penis of Rasputin. I don't think that's true, but...
But we have... I think his was on the list of things we have talked about before with preserved body parts. Rasputin, that sounds familiar.
Okay, there's a replica of his penis that was on display in New York City. Ew. Ah. Oh, that's so weird. Do you want me to send you a picture of it?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay.
But yeah, do it. Just do it. Just in case I want to. I don't know.
Okay, I'm sending it now. Oh, we're so mature. I love it.
I took a writing class last month, and we had to do an acrostic poem with our name and, like, funny, or not, it didn't have to be funny, but I tend to go with humor when I'm introducing myself to a group. But one of mine had something to do with my Google history again. It was like, I don't even remember which letter it was, but basically, like, really embarrassed if you ever check my Google history. And this is the kind of thing that, yeah.
Now it's going to be there.
Why did I open this? At least I'm not using my work computer. So that's some fun Napoleon facts for you. And then his grandson, Napoleon III, also got exiled. Mm. It's like a family tradition. So, or it wasn't actually his grandson. I think it was his nephew. So he was elected president of the French Republic in 1848 and declared himself emperor in 1851 because, so he was Napoleon III because Napoleon Bonaparte's son was the second for a very brief amount of time in 1815.
Okay.
But then Napoleon III and family tradition decided to try to conquer everything available. And he rebuilt Paris and helped unify Italy and whatnot. But he put in a puppet ruler in Mexico, Maximilian I, who was overthrown and executed in 1867. Mm. And then he was overthrown in 1870 after he was defeated by the Prussians. And then he lived out the remaining days in exile with his wife and son in England, where he hoped to be reelected president of France and lobbied the British Parliament to create an international arbitration congress, which was sort of a precursor, if you will, to the United Nations, but it was never approved.
Okay.
And then he died in 1873 during an operation to treat a bladder stone.
Ew.
And 30,000 admirers from all over Europe attended his funeral.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Hmm. So he didn't conquer as well, but he was still appreciated,
mourned,
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Shah Pahlavi was a ruler for 26 years and somehow offended literally everybody, it sounds like. So wealthy well landowners were mad because of what he did with land reforms. The peasants were mad because he had compulsory military service. The middle class was mad because he did a bunch of stuff to, like, mess with the economy. He just, like, basically offended lots and lots of people. So then he was overthrown, and unfortunately an even worse regiment went into place, but that's okay. So he fled Iran and spent the rest of his life in exile, but most countries didn't want him there because they were trying to be on good terms with the new Iranian government.
Mm-hmm.
So he spent some time in Egypt, and then he moved to Morocco, and then the king of Morocco was like, you're too much of a liability, so he sent a request to asylum to the U.S., but he was turned down because they were worried about American safety. So then he moved to the Bahamas, but then the UK got cold feet and forced him to move again. So then he went to Mexico, where he also was threatened by the government. And then finally in 1979, the US allowed him to come into the US, and he was treated for advanced lymphatic cancer at Cornell Medical Hospital in New York City. But of course, a lot of people got really mad that he was there, and the Iranian government was really mad. And some radical students retaliated by taking over the U.S. embassy and holding the embassy workers hostage for 444 days.
What?
So then this guy who was still dying, the cancer treatment wasn't working. He felt bad, I guess, so he wanted to relieve pressure from the U.S. So he went to Panama, which also had modern medical facilities.
I like how he's been in Mexico, Panama, the Bahamas. Like, he picked some good places.
I know. He actually, like, is well-traveled. But then the Panamanian government was not happy with them, and so he returned to Egypt, and there he died in 1980. So, yeah, he really, like, for being exiled, couldn't find a place that would let him stay. So, yeah, he was in Egypt, Morocco, the Bahamas, Mexico, U.S., Panama, and Egypt again during his time of exile.
Wow.
Which is a lot of traveling for every country to be like, no, we don't want you here either.
No, he had to move around a lot before he found the right place.
But so I feel like being exiled is not like the worst thing that could happen to a ruler who's been deposed, right?
I guess. Yeah. I'm just trying to think, like, if I was exiled and I like couldn't ever return to Pittsburgh, I'd be sad.
I mean, it would suck. It would still be bad. But, like, if I got exiled to the Bahamas instead of being jailed for the rest of my life.
Or killed.
Or, like, having my head chopped off.
Yeah, I'd take that.
This used to be an either or would you rather. I used to do a lot when I was little. Would you rather never be able to leave the state you're in or never be able to return to the country you're in? So you'd have to either leave America for the rest of your life or stay in the state. Isn't that like an interesting one?
Yeah.
It's like never being able to come home or never being able to leave home. Both would be terrible.
And never being able to come back to the States. I would choose never being able to leave.
To come back.
Yeah. Never be able to come back to the United States. Because if I had to live the rest of my life in Illinois, that'd be tough.
Yeah, I think I would too, but it would be really, really hard.
Yeah, both would be terrible.
I mean, the U.S. has a lot of issues, but...
Yeah, you can never see your friends. I guess your friends could come visit you, but yeah. Ooh, that's a good one. I like that.
Isn't that a good one? Mm-hmm. And then also, I mean, like, the U.S. is such a big country too.
Right.
I feel like it's...
It depends on how much you like to travel.
I've lived, like, 5 different lives in the U.S. Yeah. I do like to travel.
It depends on if you're a homebody or if you like to travel, really.
Yeah. But still, never being, like, home is still, I like to travel, but
home there's nothing is like coming back home.
Different, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no place like home.
As long as I can take Chad and Banjo, I'll manage.
Yeah, I would agree. If you had to, yeah, what if you could only talk to Chad and Banjo for the rest of your life, or you could never talk to them again? No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, God. That would also be, well, one can't talk back, so that'd be.
Is that a pro or a con? I'm not sure. Sometimes I like that Toby can't talk back. I'm like, maybe I wouldn't like him as much if I could hear what he was really thinking.
Or would it be a pro if Chad couldn't talk back? Just kidding.
What about you? Any good research?
Okay, so I really liked learning about Grima Mog and how she was a red cap.
Oh, yeah.
And
like Madoc.
Totally forgot that Madoc was also a red cap. So I did some research about red caps.
Okay, tell me more.
Okay. It's actually pretty cool. So they are classified as goblins, and they're very dangerous. So basically, I guess legends of red caps were kind of widely permeated by this 19th century folklore guy named William Henderson. And he said that red caps lived in ruined castles along the border of England and Scotland. So like that's where the folklore comes from.
They hang out. Okay.
Hang out in castles, ruined castles. And supposedly, they favor castles that saw violent events. So, like, if something terrible happened in a castle, like there was a siege or it burnt down or something like that, that's where a red cap would choose to live. That would be, like, their lair.
To be honest, I feel like castles along the border would mostly have at least one terrible event in their history.
Probably. They're extremely haunted, if I have learned anything. So, the legend is that red caps appear as old men with long, tangled hair, long talons, flaming red eyes, and their defining feature is they have this red cap on their head, this red hat. And they are said to, like, the legend is that they murder travelers who come into their homes. So, like, say there was someone who was, like, seeking shelter and came into their castle, they would target them.
Great.
I know.
So now when we're banished from the U.S., we shouldn't go to any old castles.
We're not going to do Airbnb in a deserted castle. And so what they do is they target travelers who come into their homes. They murder them with these heavy iron pikes that they carry. They cut off your head with this pike. And then they dip their hats in your blood. So the caps that they wear are red because they're dyed with their victim's blood.
Well, and that's what she said Maddox's cap was like. Yep. But I kind of forgot that in order to have, because you'd have to die pretty gruesomely for there to just be blood to dip your cap in.
Yeah, I don't want to think about
that. Like having
that.
Your head chopped off. Mm-hmm. If you're going to kill me while I'm visiting your house, can you please just, like, drug me and so I don't wake up or something? That would be my preferred way to die as a traveler.
Yes, I would agree. If I had to be killed violently by a red cap. And so the legend, according to Death, is legend. The red caps have to keep their cap soaked in blood. So it has to be, like, coated in this fresh, wet blood, because if it dries out, they die.
Ooh.
So that's the only way to kill a red cap is to, like, take its cap somehow and let it dry out of the victim's blood. And the other...
And that's the only way.
Yeah, wow. Because apparently you cannot outrun one. Like, they are so fast, you cannot outrun one. They said you can kind of keep them at bay if you quote a Bible verse at them or if you hold up a cross.
Okay.
So
we can go sandcastles, we just have to study up on some Bible verses beforehand. Yes. Okay.
That's what I learned about red caps. But it's kind of interesting, like,
that is terrifying. I'm just imagining this really old, goblin-y type man with these red eyes running like crazy through a field.
With a metal sieve.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. No, thank you. I'm going to have nightmares.
But you know what's kind of interesting is, like, have you ever seen garden gnomes?
Yes.
Oh. So they all have those red caps. And, like, I think that's where those garden gnomes came from. I think they're red caps.
Oh my goodness. I'm never going to be able to look at them the same.
I know. So much for David the gnome.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
I know. But I kind of enjoyed it. Of course I did.
Yeah. Well, and it really helps put in perspective both of these characters, Maddox and Grima Mog or whatever her name is.
Grima Mog, yeah.
Because
very bloodthirsty.
They do like their violence and their fight. And Judah said that about Maddox before too, right? Like, he needs a fight, or he's looking for war.
Yep.
And that's kind of what it feels like a little bit right now. So even if you were king, he would just, like, constantly be challenging other countries to war.
And probably. Now I'm wondering if this is a way to defeat Maddox. Like, is she going to capture his cap and let it dry out somehow? And maybe that's how Jude defeats him. Because we didn't really hear that much about him being a red cap before this book. So now I'm like, ooh, this is going to be how he dies.
Well, the interesting thing is, I don't know. Like, Jude wants him to stop being a threat for sure. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if she wants him to die.
I don't know. That's a good question.
So it'll be interesting to see if that has to happen, how that decision is made, or how she handles it.
Agreed. Oh, I can't wait to just keep reading.
I know, but now I'm at that point where it's like I both want to sit down and finish it, but I'm going to probably, like, divide it up. Like, I'll read half of what's left, and then I'll read, like, half of that.
I know. I don't want it to end.
Just to, like, keep it going. Yeah.
It's not very many pages left either. It's only, like, 200 pages, so...
True, but I do feel like the pacing, again, is really, really good. All three books have been relatively, or not super, super long, and I feel like a lot happens in a couple hundred pages.
Agreed.
So
do you want a joke for this week?
I would love one.
Okay, so I actually have a special guest today because I'm home visiting my parents, and my dad's here, so he's going to come give us a joke.
True dad joke. Love it.
Yep. Okay, so this week we have a special guest for a dad joke. My dad is here, and he is going to tell us one of his favorite jokes. Okay, ready?
Ready to go.
Go ahead.
So how do you start a race in Mother Russia?
I don't know. How?
On your marks, get set, go.
Oh, dads do it best.
Oh my god, that was so good. Thanks, Dad.
That was great. Thank you for the dad joke.
Thanks, true dad.
Capital dad. Capital joke or something. I don't know.
Okay, if you guys want to get in touch with us, you can email us at mnktalkya@gmail.com.
Or find us on Facebook or Instagram at MNKTalkYA. Let's finish this
book. Let's keep reading. I can't wait.
Bye, bookworms.
Go get a library card. M&K Talk YA is produced and edited by Marissa Snyder and Katie Bradford. Original music composition by Timothy Milkey. Logo design by Marissa Snyder. For updates and extras, visit mnktalkya.com or follow us on Instagram and Facebook. And if you haven't already, please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. We would like to thank James Tobias, Chad Snyder, Meredith Kelfi, and Michael Howard for all of their support. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.